Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio. Brought to you by OnPay. Built in Atlanta, OnPay is the top-rated payroll and HR software anywhere. Get 1 month free at onpay.com. Now, here's your host.
Lee Cantor here, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio, and we could not be doing this work without our sponsor, OnPay. So please support them so we can continue to share these important stories. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio, we have Justin Miller, and he is with Care for AIDS. Welcome, Justin.
Thanks, Lee. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, tell us about Care for AIDS. How are you serving folks?
Well, you know, Care for AIDS has been around for about 12 years, and our work is based in East Africa. And very simply, our mission is to empower people to live a life beyond AIDS. And for the past 12 years, we've been serving this very vulnerable group of people who, as many may not be aware, HIV has this profound impact on somebody's life in that context. And it affects them from a physical health perspective, but also socially and economically. And so our model is designed to take those that are living with this disease and to help them not only become physically well, but also to connect socially, to develop the skills they need to start a small business, to be counseled through the trauma that they've experienced, and really to become a flourishing individual who can take care of their family. And part of our mission is to help these parents living with HIV be able to live long enough so they can be the ones to raise and educate their children, so that we don't see this cycle of these families falling apart because a parent or two parents die because of this disease. And so we have been at this work in 68 communities now across East Africa for the past 12 years. And we've just had we've been blown away to see over 18,000 families now come through one of our programs. And the impact of that, I believe, on that part of the world and the generations to come is going to be very profound.
Now, what was the kind of the impetus to start this organization? What drew you to this?
Well, at the very experienced age of 18 years old, where I had no business being in this work, I found myself in East Africa because I had been challenged by the issue of HIV and really confronted with the question of what are you doing about it? What is, as a person of faith, what is the larger faith community doing about HIV and AIDS around the world? And so I ended up in East Africa shooting a documentary about this story. And in the process, I obviously became very personal to the people that I met, but specifically I met two just remarkable, dynamic East African leaders, Kenyan leaders to be specific, who had a very compelling vision for how they wanted to change their country around this issue. And they wanted to engage a network of churches to respond to this, and they wanted to help the most vulnerable. And ever since that time, it's been a very big conviction of mine that we need to do more to support and resource local leaders like Cornell and Duncan, my co-founders. And so when I said yes to starting this organization, it was one, because I cared for the plight of those that were affected with HIV. But secondly, I really wanted to equip Cornell and Duncan, who had a vision for their people that was designed in their context, and they just needed the resources to be able to go and chase that vision. So that was the impetus for me, was I want to partner with these leaders. I want to help them be able to launch this organization. And the three of us have been partnering together now for the past 12 years, and it has been a really beautiful partnership.
So now, how has kind of growing this organization over the years impacted you as a business person? You started this in college before you had a lot of business stuff going on, or maybe you had some, but this undertaking has grown kind of to a level that's pretty impressive. So can you talk about how this has kind of aligned with how you grew as a business person?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, thankfully, when it did start, as you said, I mean, I have grown alongside the organization. Today, we have over 200 employees. At the age of 18, 19 years old, I don't think I would have had any clue how to manage that. But along the way, as the organization has grown, as I've tried to build a board to support the organization, a team of leaders in the organization, or raise the partners and the donors needed to support the organization. Thankfully, in that experience, it has allowed me to develop the skills and the competencies and the leadership needed to kind of help the organization go to the next level. But we could spend so much time probably talking about what are the specific ways that I've grown, but there's probably nothing greater than just the ability to lead people. When this started, it was just the three of us, and now we have a team of 200 people who are looking to us for vision, for inspiration, for strategy, and to create a culture that is a place where they can thrive in their work. And so I think that is a big category, but leading people has obviously been probably the biggest area of growth for me as a leader.
Now, what about, what would you tell other college students that have maybe dreams, but they're hesitant to take on something? I mean, obviously, when you started this, I don't know if you imagined it to be the magnitude it is now, but when you started it, it was still starting something from nothing. What would you tell college students who are contemplating starting this rather than, this is someone else's problem, I'll just let them do it, and I'll volunteer there, but, you know, that I'll help, but I don't want to actually be the helper.
Yeah, well, if this is something that someone is led to do, and there is a really compelling motivation behind them that's driving them to pursue this, then, I mean, for me, it's been obviously one of the greatest adventures of my life, and just work that I love to do. I typically do encourage people, though, and I wish I had done even more of this when we started, but before you start the organization, really spend some time getting to understand the people that you want to serve and the problem you want to try to solve. Because at the end of the day, the causes and the problems that we're facing in our world are way more complex than I ever even imagined them to be. And I think our solutions have to be, you know, appropriate. And so we have to really get close to the issue. We have to, I think proximity is key, and we have to ask ourselves really hard questions of, you know, what would have to happen here so that our organization no longer needed to be here. Because really we do want to create nonprofit organizations that I think at their best, they address a need, they create capacity, and then they're able to step back instead of trying to just perpetually be involved in a problem. And so I think for me, before anyone leaps into the nonprofit space, which I would encourage them to do, because there's so many amazing ways that you can serve. But I think my encouragement would be really get involved in spending time listening and learning in the kind of context where you want to serve. And I think you'll be able to design a response to that need that's so much more appropriate and sustainable for the long term if you do that on the front end.
Well, tell us a little bit about the book that you've recently released, Beyond Blood, Hope and Humanity in the Forgotten Fight Against AIDS.
Yeah, this was an amazing project that I was so fortunate to be able to share with my two co-founders, Cornell and Duncan. It really is just it's a story that's written starting with our childhoods. As you can imagine, my childhood growing up in the suburb of Atlanta, Georgia, is radically different than my co-founders who grew up in rural poverty in East Africa. But we start with our childhood and we talk about the influences in our lives and the experiences that led us to intersect with one another in 2007 and how that led to the birth of this organization, Care for AIDS. And I think it's a really important story as we look at the times that we live in, to take three guys, to give a little background, my co-founders come from very opposing tribes in East Africa. And this organization was actually founded amidst one of the most violent times in Kenya's history, after the election of 2007. In the midst of that violence, where Cornell and Duncan's tribes were fighting one another, this organization was born, and we started serving people with HIV. And so I think as you look at the three stories, and they're told each from our own perspective and how they're woven together, to see how three guys from really radically different backgrounds came together to create this organization, I think it's a story that would encourage people as we think about how do we build intentional relationships with people that may not look, think, or believe like we do, but there could be something really amazing on the other side of that relationship.
Are there any learnings about the virus and how it impacts communities that we can relate to with the pandemic that's going on now? Like, viruses don't respect borders, they don't respect tribes. You know, they're kind of equal opportunity in this regard.
Yeah, it is exactly true. I mean, there are some, obviously HIV and COVID are, not the same type of virus, and many things that are different. But in terms of just the way this is affecting the communities in East Africa, even right now, from the economic impact, the social and health implications, it's something that we're still, as an organization, trying to understand our role. I know for our organization, the most important thing is we've continued to serve our clients through telemedicine and telecounseling as a whole. But there are major trade-offs that are happening that we have to really continue to weigh in that region, as people continue to be in an economic shutdown, under curfews, and also facing the threat of this virus. It's a very complex issue, especially when you're working in some of the poorest communities in the world.
Now, you talk about redemptive entrepreneurship. Can you kind of share a little bit about what you mean by that?
Yeah, this is an amazing concept, and one that I give all the credit to an organization called Praxis, who really, in my mind, is kind of the driver behind this big idea. But they define the word redemptive as restoration through sacrifice. And as I think about redemptive entrepreneurship, and even in our books, we talk about redemptive relationships. I think it's a higher aspiration for us as business leaders to not just think about how do we run an ethical business, or how do we even run a social enterprise. It's this calling to realize that as a business, as a nonprofit, we have an opportunity to shape and influence culture in a really powerful way. And how are we going to steward that influence? Are we going to use it just to try to exploit culture? Or are we going to try to use it to create renewal in our culture that so badly needs it? As a leader, are we going to be in it to just pursue our own ambition? Or are we going to use this business as a platform to bless others and kind of lead from a place of humility and sacrifice? And so I think as a business leader, I would always want to continue to keep this idea of redemptive entrepreneurship at the forefront of my mind, saying that instead of trying to extract everything that I can for my benefit or for the benefit of my business, how do I sacrifice as a leader to help be a force for restoration in my customers and my employees and my partners and my vendors? And I think it's something that we should continue to aspire to. And I think it is a high calling, and one that's not easy to practice, but I think it's worth it.
So what's next? What do you need more of right now?
What's next for us? I mean, our world has been a little bit shaken by the COVID, as everyone's has, but we are still looking to the future to say, as these restrictions are eased, how do we continue to press into more communities across East Africa? And we were already in the process of developing a mobile application for our clients as more and more people in East Africa get onto a smartphone platform. So looking for other ways that we can connect through technology as well. But there's nothing that's a substitute for the in-person program that we have in place. And we want to just continue to expand that. And to do that, we're just going to continue to need more partners and donors to be able to replicate this model across East Africa. And then hopefully in the years to come, be able to move into places like Southern Africa, where HIV is also felt very heavily down there as well.
If somebody wanted to learn more about the organization and or get their hands on the book, is there a website?
Absolutely. Yes, they can learn everything they need to know at careforaid.org. And they can find us on all the social channels by that same name. And they can pick up a copy of the book there. They can order it on Amazon. And we would just love to connect with you on one of those platforms.
Well, Justin, thank you so much for sharing your story today. All right, this is Lee Cantor. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio. And remember, please support our sponsor, OnPay. Without them, we could not share these important stories. We'll see you all next time.
Today's episode of Atlanta Business Radio is brought to you by OnPay. Built in Atlanta, OnPay is the top-rated payroll and HR software anywhere. Get 1 month free at onpay.com.